from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist, everybody. I am your host, Jacob Forte.
And I'm Jeff.
No, you're not. Stop lying.
Okay, I'm Ryan.
Yay. Yeah. He's being truthful now. Ryan who? Do you have a last name, Ryan?
Ryan Harkness.
Ryan Harkness. All right, groovy. Today we're going to talk about Christmas. We're going to be talking about the Golden Compass, and we're going to have a year review looking back at 2007 and hopefully talking and making some empty promises about 2008.
Ooh, I like empty promises.
I am the king of empty promises. All right, first up, let's talk a little bit about, what do you think about the opening song there? You know, I don't even remember who sang it. Mm-hmm. It's like a one-hit wonder band that's like singing about going to heaven.
Oh, total hippies. But I mean, it's catchy.
They look
like
clowns on there. Actually, I saw the cover of the album. They actually have clown suits on or something.
I can dig it. I mean, I don't know why you hate. I mean, I understand why you hate the song just because
it's catchy.
Because it's religious connotations. But I mean, I dig that.
I just
stuff.
Don't know. I don't dig the part where he's like, "Look, listen. I'm listening to Marvin Gaye, dude. Mm. You don't get more religious than that." He has this one be like. Like, don't talk about my father. Just talk about me. Jesus is my friend. You know what I mean? Like, I still dig it. I just don't dig the one line that pisses me off, which is like, I'm going to go to the place that's the best. And that's I don't like that.
I don't know. I think it's better than, you know, all that kids' music nowadays. Is I'll just suck it and put it in you and eat in the yard and get
be like bitches and hoes.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
Fair enough. Or like those songs just like, I like to cut myself emo. Hate those emo things. All right, let's talk first about the Golden Compass. Now, for some of you that are unaware, like, you know, the people that live in caves, apparently, Golden Compass a couple weeks ago came out, and it was a big stink because, obviously, the author, Philip Pullman, is a well-known atheist, and the book is really about a girl's journey to kill God. So it really didn't kind of sit well when they announced that a movie was being made. They spent $200 million on it, got a whole bunch of really big stars.
they kind of didn't realize the fact that you make a movie about a girl's journey to kill God, and people will not go and see it.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like somebody says, it's just like Harry Potter. And someone's like, I like it. Well, there's something you should know. I don't think so. I think we have a winner here.
I think I know that we're going to make lots of money. Moving on.
All right, here's $200 million.
But here's the funny thing. Because, I mean, Harry Potter was controversial as well. Harry Potter had the whole issue with witchcraft. And Satanism. And so I guess that didn't sit too... Because I guess the whole idea of it is... I mean, people already joke about witches and wizards and stuff like that. No one thinks, oh, you like witches and wizards, you're a Satanist. I mean, it's a pretty dubious
well
connection.
It would be the same thing as saying, like, we can't have Halloween, this is the devil's holiday.
But I mean, say, like, if like Harry Potter had, you know, a part where they're like, Jesus killed death and stuff like
no,
that,
there's this one spell that it's like Jesus resurrectus and it raises the dead or something.
Yeah,
but, maybe they wouldn't be too keen on that.
But yeah, I mean, I guess that's probably what they thought. Is Harry Potter? There was a big
there was some controversy.
Yeah, big stink about that. So what's the big deal about this? You know, it's liberal Hollywood. Liberal Hollywood just missed it again.
They really missed the boat on that one. You know, I'm not happy about the situation that everyone's like, don't go see this movie. It's like atheism is hopeless and all this other kind of stuff. And you know, going back to what Good Atheist is all about is. I mean, I know that a lot of shows, people are like, oh, you just go over and you're basically bashing religion or whatever. And okay, you know what? That's true.
You are a little bit of a negative Nelly.
I am a negative Nelly, but I mean, it has to mostly do with my frustration. But as I said before, I mean, atheism doesn't promote hopelessness. You have to wonder, I'm just, you know what? If I was that hopeless, I don't think I'd get out of bed. I mean, I don't even think I'd do a radio show. Be like, there's no hope for me.
Well, then let me ask you this, buddy. Why did you not go and see the Golden Compass yourself?
Well, here's the thing. Number one, I hear it's not very good. And this is not from, like, you know, christianmonitor.com or something like that. It's just from the fact that they made the movie way too short.
Yeah.
They tried to take a book that's like a few hundred pages and be like, well, let's do this treatment in 1 hour and 57 minutes. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I think it was like 145, and that's why I didn't go see it, because I'm like, you know what? There's no way in hell they're going to do this book justice.
You know what? I'm going to wait until the director's cut comes out, because I bet you it's going to be like 10 times better. You know, where they add on another, there was an hour that was deleted because they didn't think that children would have that kind of attention span. And I guess it's true in a way. I mean, you can't make a 3-hour movie if you're trying to attract kids. There's that really, ugh, I mean, how long are you supposed to make a movie like that?
Now, here's a question, another question. Do you think when they put a whole bunch of extra time back into the movie with the director's cut, do you think that a lot of that God context is going to come back into the movie? Basically, just because the studio's like, well, we already got fucked on it, we might as well push the envelope a little bit?
I think the problem, look, the other reason why I didn't go see it, which I didn't mention, is the fact that all of the, you know, atheistic themes toned down. Like, they just toned everything down. It's like they, you know, they turned the volume from 11 to a 3. That's a comedy reference. I don't know if you get that.
I don't know.
11! No? You never watched Spinal Tap?
No.
Okay. Anyways, moving on from that. But no, it's just, it's toned down, so why would I want to see a toned down movie that they, you know, Hollywoodized to just make everyone accept it, even though they knew that wasn't going to happen? I mean, they should have just targeted us 10% that would have actually want to watch it.
Yeah. But, I mean, basically, this movie got, you know, it got destroyed, not primarily for the fact, but, I mean, you can't deny the fact that it got really shit-kicked for, and pardon my language, for basically being an atheist film.
It got
pegged, and it got sunk. And, I mean, because who wants to bring their kids to an atheist film, really? I mean, that's how it got marketed. So
that's you're promoting hopelessness. You'd be like, children, after you watch this movie, you're probably not going to want to do anything anymore because you won't feel Jesus' love. But no longer going to be there.
This is kind of why, like to me, why it's kind of important to do this kind of podcast, because to me it's the idea that old Christians say they're persecuted and stuff like that. But then you have a movie that gets pegged as being atheist, and all these people are like, oh, that's crappy, and we're not going to go see it. And it's the same thing with, say, imagine a presidential candidate came out and said, I don't believe in God. He would be torpedoed. He would never, ever win.
Dude, he would literally be torpedoed. Somebody would just launch a torpedo at him and blow him up. Be like, you are going to die.
And it's like, you can say a lot of stuff for, yeah, religion is being persecuted by, you know, by atheists and stuff like that. But the truth of the matter is that we still get discriminated against. It's in many different ways. Atheists get a bum rap in a lot of different ways, just as you see with this movie here getting a bum rap because it got labeled as an atheist film, even though it basically sold out.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because at the same time, there were a lot of school districts banned the book outright. They were just like, you know, pull it from libraries, pull it from, like, yeah, school shelves, that kind of stuff, because they were like, well, again, I mean, they do that whole, it promotes hopelessness and that kind of garbage. Like, this is not pornography here. It's not like the little girl goes riding naked on a freaking, you know, giant dildo. I mean, for God's sakes. They make it sound almost pornographic. But, you know, just on a bit of a tangent for like 3 seconds, and this just goes to what you were saying, where, you know, religious people are feeling pretty persecuted. And I think it has a lot to do with two factors. Factor number one is that the individuals that are speaking out for atheism, these are powerful individuals. And by powerful, I don't mean necessarily politically powerful, but they're intellectual, like, you know, giants. They're the big dogs. And what's destroying or what's causing a lot of this fear is the strength and power of these arguments. And really, like, it's almost like, you know, you're watching a boxing match and there's a guy who's like 300 pounds of sheer muscle and you're throwing like a 12-year-old boy into the ring. And they just feel as though they're just getting bashed and beaten and shit kicked. The only problem is that there's about 6 billion of these 12-year-old boys. I mean, there's only so much you can do until they just overwhelm you and
drag you down.
Like jump on you like spider monkeys or something like that. So I can see where that, you know, that fear and they're not used to being on the defensive. You know, this is not something they're used to. For a long time, atheists is just like, shut the hell up. Keep your mouth shut and, you know, just pretend that you believe and everybody's going to be happy.
Otherwise, you could be burned at the stake.
Otherwise, you'll be, you know, beaten, killed, ostracized. And, I mean, it's still true that people do get ostracized. I told you a little while ago, I had a fan, a 15-year-old boy, who was being ostracized by his school because he was questioning the whole creationist angle that his teacher was pitching. And I'm like, that's messed up.
That is
really messed up. And although, you know, even some of our fans that are themselves religious, they keep saying, oh, you know, stop bashing religion, promote atheism. And I'm like, well, to promote atheism, I kind of have to call you bastards out when you're doing shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, not cool. Not cool. And you know what? All of you moderates, the ones that are fans of the show, you should be speaking out against that shit. I mean, like, these are your believer brethren. And sure, you can call them bad Christians and stuff like that, but you got to do more than that. You got to really, like, you know, join on a bit of on our side and say, like, hey, these guys are allowed to believe what they want to believe, or else, you know, it's just it's not fair, it's not right. Okay, going back to the Golden Compass thing. Now, I didn't actually read the books either. I'm not into sort of like fiction, so I can't actually comment on whether or not they were good.
You know, it's funny for me being like a big sci-fi fantasy buff, I figured I would have heard of or read these books. No, I haven't.
They didn't really. It's strange because, you know what? No one went to go watch the movie, but everywhere I see on the metro now, everybody's got the book. Everyone's reading the book. So they're not. I think that the movie probably just doesn't stand because it's probably a crappy movie.
Yeah.
But everyone is curious to see what the big deal is about.
Oh, what the big atheist angle is.
Exactly. Exactly. And on another side note, it's kind of funny. I actually bought the books for my dad because he's a big atheist himself, and he was always saying, "We have to kill God." And I thought, you know, I think this is a good present. Here, Dad. Here's a little girl that tries to do it.
And what happens?
Well, he hasn't started the book yet. It's kind of a monster. You know, it's all three books, so it's like really, really big and thick. And I think he's a little intimidated by it. But I'm going to get his review. He'll be my reviewer. I don't want to read it. I'm not going to read every book that an atheist writes. I mean, like, for God's sakes. All right, let's move on to the next thing that I wanted to talk about. And this is something I call the Santa Claus experiment. Now, Christmas has come and gone. And, you know, we all remember the big red guy. He's been put back in the shelf. We're not going to hear about him for another, 10 months. Thank God. Like, just you get tired of Santa Claus. But it made me think the other day. And when I was thinking, like, if I become a parent, would I teach my kids about Santa Claus? Now, I want to hear your opinion, Ryan. Like, you have some kids. Are you going to do the whole Santa Claus thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, why do you want to do the Santa Claus thing?
Because it's something fun for the kid. It's something fun.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Now, you know, I was a bit of a cynic a couple of years back. Still am a bit, but much more back then. I was like, I'm not going to do this whole Santa bullshit. I mean, it's just you're lying to the kid. And it's just, I mean, you're being dishonest and that kind of stuff, right? You're creating this, I don't know, this fairy tale form. And I just thought that it would be, well, not very genuine. And then I kind of woke up, slapped myself in the back of the head.
And realized that you were being that lame atheist.
Exactly, exactly. I realized it. But then there was another realization that I had. Kind of like that, you know, not mean side, but, you know, whenever I get very, what's the word I'm looking at? Scheming.
Yes.
My scheme was basically this. I'm like, I have to teach my kid about Santa. In fact, I am going to be like a Santa over-enthusiast. I'm gonna sell the Santa thing a lot. Like, I'm just really going to lay it on thick. And the reason is because I consider this to be a form of experiment. Here's the experiment. Think about it. I mean, here we are where we tell these kids lies. I mean, we outright recognize it as a lie. We know it doesn't exist.
On a societal scale,
it is a massive lie. It is one of the biggest lies that we've ever told kids, and we just keep on telling them this lie. And there's a weird connotation to this lie, because when the kid discovers this lie, discovers that we've been tricking them, they suddenly become adults. By rejecting the very lie that we keep on promoting, they grow and they develop in society. We reward them. And you know what? The funny thing is, you watch a kid as he stops believing in Santa, and you know what happens? They ask the same questions. They ask very rational, very, you know, smart question. They're like, how can Santa deliver all these presents in one night? Why is it that some kids don't get presents? Why is it that I didn't get what I wanted? What happens to Santa? Like, how can he produce all these gifts? You know, these are valid questions.
How do reindeers fly?
There's another good question. So all of a sudden these questions keep propping up, and the more they ask these questions and no one can provide a satisfactory answer, the less they're likely to believe until they recognize it as being a giant lie. And the other thing that's interesting about this is that most kids, when they find out that there's no Santa, they continue the lie for years to please the parents. I mean, how screwed up is that? We just lie to each other in order to provide that sort of like fun little comfort. And it's, for me, it's the kick in the sack. You know what I mean? Like just saying, hey, let's lie to ourselves. Let's promote this this whole charade and see where it takes us. And I'm like, this is a wonderful experiment. It teaches kid one thing. Adults, they'll lie to you. People will lie to you. They will make you, they will feed you any kind of BS if they think it's either good for you, fun, or just to get, you know, for shits and giggles. That's the Santa Claus experiment, my friend.
I figure the Santa Claus experiment, or at least the result of it, is to wait for the kid to realize that they have to think critically about things, think things through, and not believe everything they're told. And that's the whole idea of when you're growing up, you turn off the idea of Santa, and it's, you know, like you were saying, you're going to go hardcore on it. It's an interesting idea to really try and shove that Santa thing down the kid's throat and see if you can really trick him good for like a long time.
Well, you know, one of the things that I was mentioning in like the book that I'm working on is also kind of this. I asked this very, sounds like a silly question, right? But why do you think that Santa Claus, who shares a lot of kind of the same myths that you see in other religious figures or pseudo-religious figures, why is it that Santa Claus kind of never developed into its own religion? I mean, it could have. I mean, it sounds like one of those things that really kind of very attractive.
Well, didn't he cross over, like, in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? He became, like, a mythical religious figure, and he showed up, and he gave them weapons and stuff like that.
Santa Claus?
Yeah, he does.
I don't even remember.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
I don't know. They forced me to read that in my school because of its, like, Christian undertones.
The allegory for Jesus, the Lion Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The Lion. No, but
that's about as close as he's ever gotten to religious canon.
I think it has to do with more with the fact that, you know, Santa Claus never developed any morality myths beyond kind of like the quaint things for kids. It's basically a religion for children.
Mm-hmm. If you're good, you get rewarded, and yes, if you're bad, you get coal.
You get a lump of coal. And it's a very simple kind of like punishment reward kind of scheme, right? Mm. And the philosophy behind Clausism is pretty damn quaint. It's just, you know, be good, try to do it all year round. And another reason is also
somebody is watching.
Yeah, he knows what you've been thinking. He knows when you're awake too, apparently, which is just the scariest prospect I've ever heard. But no, like if you think about it, there's another reason too, is because Santa Claus is really just, it's drilled into you for maybe 2 months max.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, I mean, do people talk about Santa Claus in June?
No, it's like a what have you done for me lately thing. You only care about Santa Claus when you're getting close to your reward, while you care about God all the time because you never know when you're going to die. So you got to keep God on the mind.
Yeah, you got to keep him on your you got to keep him on his good side. You know?
Exactly.
It's a little less predictable, but you know when Christmas is coming. You don't know when your death is coming. That's a little bit different.
Mm.
And besides, I mean, the kind of things you ask for Santa is just, you know, consumer goods. It's not things like, I need a new job, or get me a girlfriend, or can you get rid of these cysts on my penis?
Cysts. Oh my God.
I went there. But yeah, I think that those few reasons themselves kind of give us an interesting look at how religions evolve, or how they stop evolving, how they just basically move from a proto-religion to just very basic traditions. They don't carry on any of the, you know, it's the religious elements that they could have developed into. Because if you think about it, I mean, if Santa Claus was more than just giving presents, if it's also about, I don't know, absolving you from sin.
Well, I guess maybe one of the, I might be off base, but one of the things may be, I mean, because Christmas is kind of a twofer, you know, it gets all mixed up because you got Santa Claus, which is considered the non-religious part of it all, and then you got Jesus, which is just the most overpowering thing. So it's like, how can Santa Claus
compete
with Jesus, which is supposed to be like, you know, the big deal? And it's funny because he really dominates Jesus' ass nowadays.
Because how many commercials do you see
with Jesus?
You know, you'd think you'd see one Walmart commercial with him, but apparently he's a little too controversial. No one wants to use him. Yeah. Santa Claus is safe. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're like what religion. Everybody likes Santa. I mean, that was the whole ridiculousness of the war on Christmas we were talking about. But everybody likes Christmas. Non-Christians like Christmas. I mean, because they like the secular elements. Everybody
I don't know.
Loves
I mean,
Santa.
But if you talk to any Muslims and be like, you know, do you associate with Santa Claus or do you just think he's a white infidel?
I don't know. I had a few Muslim friends when I was living in Toronto, and the subject of Christmas never really came up. It was like,
but what did they do during Christmas?
I don't know. They probably fast or something. They're always fasting.
Oh, that sucks.
I know, it's terrible. Fasting. I'm like, that's the opposite of the whole Christmas tradition. We do the opposite.
No wonder they all are in such bad moods.
Very nice. Very nice. I'm not going to get any emails about that comment.
Well, it's not like they'd send you happy emails anyways. they just fasted all through Christmas.
Well, you know, it'd be good for your diet. You know,
yes, it's true.
I guess we'd be a lot less of a fat nation if we fasted around Christmas time. But what are you going to do? All right, moving on from the Santa Claus experiment, let's talk year in review.
How long have we been doing this podcast, Jacob?
We have been doing this podcast for about half a year. We started, I believe, in April.
Something like that.
So it's gonna come on 1 year. I'm sure we'll have a 1 year spectacular if there are still things to talk about. Who knows? Maybe.
So long as the Christian overlords haven't taken us down.
Yeah. Well, you know, once atheism dominates, I'm sure we'll be able to turn off the radio record button and just enjoy the day. Enjoy the atheist day.
Enjoy the fruits of our labor.
Now, okay, so taking a look back from, you know, the first episode to the kind of episode that we have now, like, have you gone back and listened to any of the old episodes? No, you haven't.
God, no. No. I don't like how I sound on the radio.
No,
so.
Really? I can't stop listening to myself.
That's a big surprise.
Yeah, isn't it, though?
No.
No, it's really not. Okay, well, do you remember any of the shows that we did before?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Well, this is a year in review. I want your review of what The Good Atheist has been so far.
I say that the overall review for the entire year, my thoughts on it would be that Muslims really get a raw deal about everything.
On our show?
Not on our show, just in general. I'd say the year in review, it's like it's a really bad time to be a Muslim.
Well, yeah, I definitely have to agree. I would say that, you know, in the year in review, there are a few kind of like religions themselves that I haven't been able to get into and talk about. Some of the things that have upset me. Most particularly Hindu religion and some of the stuff that's been going on in India. We haven't had much time to talk about it. The other thing that we haven't had much time to talk about is kind of like what's been happening in Africa in terms of like what I can only describe as not religious wars, but the war for people's faith, you know, Christianity versus Islam in Africa and what that's causing. And, you know, over the next year, I kind of like to focus on that because it's one of those stories that gets really buried and ignored. It's talked about like a page, you know, a buried page in BBC, and you don't hear about it.
Yeah.
So really what I'd like to do is talk a little bit more about that. That's something that I think I really want to focus, get a little bit more involved. There's a bunch of stories that I'm going to talk about next week in particular.
So are you saying that we're going to start covering in-depth more stuff that isn't just tawdry, ridiculous, and over the top?
We're actually
going to get a little bit more educational?
I like to kind of switch it up once in a while, but I don't know. Lots of people like kind of like your jovialness and us playing around. I think that there's still room for a little bit more seriousness. In terms of my studies, I haven't exactly been, you know, buckling down, but I'd like to do a little bit more of that. I think that was kind of like the weakness. There's a, you know, few factual errors in some of the other podcasts.
We claim that
Sudan was in the Middle East. That was a mistake. we're dumb.
Yeah, we looked pretty dumb on
that.
That was the number one atheist podcast on iTunes. That was pretty embarrassing.
That is embarrassing. Yeah. Well, you know, at least we're not boring.
That's true.
With the old, well, welcome to the show. Today's guest is a professor of theology at the Department of Boring.
He's also got a double major in mathematics, and he'll be explaining to us why mathematics proves that Jesus was never born.
We, you know, funny enough, we actually had a fan who was requesting to know what our educational background was.
Oh, man.
Yeah. We covered this in one show. If you go back, you'll find out that we are just basically like, you know, college dropouts.
Yeah, pretty much. I flunked out of college playing hacky sack and foosball, and that's not even a joke.
I thought you have a degree in marketing.
Hmm?
Don't you have a degree in marketing?
No. I have a... Well, I flunked out of Cégep, which is Quebec College.
Wow. That's like the last year of high school for most, in most countries.
Yeah, but I do have my high school. And then I got my advertising degree.
Yeah. Oh, at like one of those kind of cheap-ass colleges?
No, it was a real one. It was a real one. None of that DeVry crap.
Oh, right. They wouldn't know where that is. Most of our fans are like actually, you know, in the States. They don't know.
Yeah, DeVry's in the States.
Is it really?
Yeah, DeVry. Anyway.
Anyways, whatever. So our education is actually pretty pathetic, like on paper. If you saw my, you know, collection of books, it's pretty good. So yeah, that's my education. My education is my library card.
And we're kind of a big deal on the internet.
On the webs, yeah. The interwebs. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with being an autodidact. In fact, I think you'll find that most of the people that are, you know, good at expressing themselves tend to not be part of that whole, you know, stuffy institution. But that's just my thought. I couldn't hack it because I can't stand someone telling me what to read. I just the thought disgusts me. Just so I can have a piece of paper. Screw it. I can make my own career. God damn it. So,
one podcast at a time.
One podcast at a time. This is not our only one, by the way.
Hmm.
We do many podcasts.
But don't tell them about the other ones.
No,
they'll lose respect.
They will lose all respect. The other one you're not allowed to know about, if you're a fan.
Ryan and Jacob's Pornography and Review.
Buttplugsreview.com.
Yes.
The other thing that I was thinking about, and I was talking about this, and here's one thing that I want you fans, because most of our fans don't actually go to the site. That's understandable. There's not a lot there most of the time. I did want to kind of change that, actually. In the upcoming year, I wanted to make it a little bit more of a discussion area where people can ask questions, and then we'd mention it during the show. I do want fans to kind of like get a little bit more involved. And one way that I want to get them a little bit more involved, and I've been talking about this with a few guys around the country and stuff like that, is I would like to have a conference where we invite people to come down and to talk, because one of the things that I think is the great shame of atheism right now is that there's no organized kind of not movement per se, but I find that everyone's sort of like divided all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a non-believer, but you really don't have a lot of information about atheism, you don't know where to look, you don't know how to really educate yourself, I mean, where are you going to go? And I think that that's kind of stupid that we don't have that. You know, there's a lot of different organization, you know, and they're small and they're fragmented, and that's fine. But I'm talking about creating a network where all of us can kind of come together and, you know, form these kinds of associations, meet people from different parts of the country, maybe, you know, if it gets big enough, different parts of the world, and really kind of help provide that support for people that want to know more about it and people that are already, you know, aware of it, but just don't know who to turn. And you know, there isn't a strong community idea yet.
Yeah, it's true. Pretty much, I've noticed on the internet, there's a pretty big void for communities. And basically, you know, if they're there, they're put together kind of half-assed, and no one really takes any lead or initiative, and nobody's really doing anything with anything. Which is a pretty big contrast to, say, the Christian war machine, which is...
they are organized, but they've been doing it for a long time. And, you know, they're very good at it, which is why, you know, most people believe in something. I mean, I don't think it has so much to do as, like, that an atheist is a specific type of person. That, oh, well, this person is just more educated, because we know that that's not necessarily true. There are correlations between that, but it's not universal. It's just... You know, most of the time, a lot of these people are just curious people. You know, they're people that just don't accept things based on no evidence whatsoever. And that's a good start. But I think that it's also, at the same time, there's a lot of people that could probably, you know, reject their antiquated, uncritical beliefs if they had, like, the kind of community support. And you know, like, the whole reason I started this, the first podcast, is I said, I want to help create a more organized movement for this. It's ridiculous. Like, the average atheist is still like, I don't need nobody. Reject institutions, man.
Yeah, they don't want to do anything. And I remember probably the biggest pop the website had, and that was basically when we started doing the podcast, was when you said, is atheism a religion?
Yeah.
And boy, did People didn't even read it, but they sure gave you flack for the...
They had their opinions about it, and most of these guys were atheists and being like, this is exactly why I'm an atheist, because it's not a religion, and I refuse to believe the dogma. And I'm like, whoa, buddy, relax. If you would have carefully noted at the very end of the article, I'm like, obviously atheism is not, but there are certain things that we can lament about not having. And, you know, the first thing that I did, like, right when I started, I mean, I talked to you about this, and I was saying, I'm trying to get people together and organized and sharing ideas, and you're like, that's a terrible idea. Atheists don't want to get together, that's why they're atheists. And I'm like, no, you have to open, you know, people's eyes to the fact that that's not what being an atheist is. It doesn't mean that you just reject every, you know, group or institution. We all belong to groups. We belong to social group. We belong to, you know, a work is kind of a group. Why not a group where we can share ideas, where we can discuss about our experiences? What the hell's wrong with that?
You know what? I would say that the most important need for one of these groups is the fact that we definitely have to be around to discuss issues going on with, say, creationism, abortion rights, all of that stuff. Because to me, the whole issue, and again, the reason why I'm on the show is just because there's too many instances nowadays where religious people are getting a say in things and messing up my own crap. Like the idea, you know, 50 years down the road, I don't want to die because we weren't eating baby stem cells.
I think you're quoting a South Park thing where they need to eat it to get stronger.
Something like
that.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, it doesn't have to be eating them.
But just in general, like if there's a reason for atheists to organize, it has to be at least for the dissemination of factually incorrect information that is being generated by the Christian right wing propaganda,
or just
machine.
any conservative religious, you know, sort of like majority. And that's the unfortunate thing. I mean, they are a majority, and so many of them just really like presidential candidate Mike Huckabee. All right. He wants to eliminate abortion rights. He wants to reinstate kind of like the Ten Commandments, prayer in school, all that kind of stuff. The guy is a nut case. He's a real nutcase. He said he believes that AIDS is a punishment for gay people, and he sticks by that statement. Now, this is a man running for president of the United States. If there isn't a reason for people to get a little organized and to start really, you know, telling people about this, I can't think of one. Name me one. Oh, what? So you can all be by yourselves in your little basement thinking, look how smart I am because I don't believe in God? Like, seriously, honestly, get the hell out of your basement. Let's get together. And I'm thinking conference. And I'm telling you right now, I do want to have one in 2008. Mm-hmm. I don't know how big it'll be. Probably very small. But I would like to have one. And I just want to invite people from different organizations to come together and just talk and see. Maybe we all have kind of like a similar idea where we want this to go, but we need to have a conversation, people. And I think it'd be a lot of fun to see, you know, the different kinds of people and what they're doing to, you know, help other fellow atheists and, you know, fight the good fight.
Well, if there's one thing that's for sure, Jacob, it's that I will be there.
You don't sound convinced. Took me a whole year to convince you of the idea and to get you on the show. And now I don't even know if you'll be in the conference. I'm hurt, buddy.
Oh, don't worry. I'll probably have to do all the work.
There you go. Exactly. I'll be the voice. You're the work. Phenomenal. Okay, with that, we're going to wrap things up. Since this is the beginning of the new year, this is the beginning for everybody. So I just want to wish all the fans out there a happy new year. Hopefully I'm not too late to wish everybody that. Is there anything you want to say to our fans? I guess that's what.
See you next week, because I won't leave you in the grip of anybody else.
Oh, well, you've decided to get back into that.
Well, I mean, the whole idea was, and as we said, we're going to be doing this more regularly now, right?
Yep,
so the only reason I wasn't around last week is because Jake was lazy, and then I was on a plane, and then it was all over.
I just forgot my microphone.
Yep,
it wasn't laziness. It was just really forgetful. Love me so much, eh? I hate having a stranglehold on the whole, atheist podcast thing. We're not even consistent, yet we still dominate. So sad. So sad.